2 years ago, I wouldn't be here. So like VC platform is the same. Like we mentioned earlier on, like how collaborative and how helpful people can be. So if you want to get into space, just connect, like go search LinkedIn, like find Joshua, find us. Like there's so many people working on the platform. They are willing to chat. Don't hesitate. Just reach out. Like it's a people business. It's not a money business.
So honestly, going into this episode, I was a little bit nervous because it was my first time hosting two guests on the exact same episode. But both Rachel and Emily, they have this unique way of making you feel very comfortable, and they're super friendly. So naturally, 20 minutes into the episode, I felt like I had known both of them for years. It was crazy. Both Rachel and Emily have spent under 2 years in their respective funds, leading operations, community, and platform. And they had such interesting points of view to share with me, and I'm just so happy they came on. And if you're someone who's looking to get into the VC platform role and it's going to be your first role in venture capital, I highly recommend you listen to this episode. And by the way, you might want to stick around towards the ending because I got roasted for asking a question. Can you believe it? I almost got canceled on my own show. It was beautiful. Enjoy. You've now arrived at your destination. Rachel and Emily, what a pleasure having you guys on. Can't tell you how many weeks it took for us to finally schedule this in, but I know we're calling in from three different parts of the world, and I can't tell you how excited I am. But to get the audience just as excited as I am today, why don't you tell the audience who you are and what you're up to?
Great. Well, hi, everyone. I'm Rachel. I'm born and raised in Hong Kong, but right now I am with Elite Partners, which is a PropTech early stage fund in Canada. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about me later on, but that's it for now.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Emily. I'm currently in Baltimore, Maryland, and I work for Roble Ventures, which is based in the Bay Area.
So let me maybe, let's time travel. Okay, let's go back to the first time you guys joined your funds. I imagine it must have been quite a journey. I know you guys have been at your funds for more or less a year now. What was that first week like? You know, how did you adapt to the environment, and just talk to us through it? I'm super curious.
So on my first day, I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing. Why am I here? I was asked to work on a deal memo for an investment that our GP was about to close on. And at the time, it was just me and him. Mm-hmm. So I was thrown about as far into the deep end as you can get. So I think for me, it was really about finding a way to connect to the mission and connecting that to my values. And I think I saw like the impact of what we were doing and like navigating that thin line between, you know, everything that we dream technology is able to do to improve our lives and then actually help the people who are bringing that into being. I found that to be very compelling, to be at like the front lines of progress. So I'd say so far I'm very early into my career, but it is definitely the craziest job I've ever had. It's definitely the most intellectually stimulating. So it's been very exciting.
I mean, you're doing good, Emily, like writing investment memo in the first week. I mean, I remember my first week, like I was still back in Hong Kong because I didn't come to Canada until the third month, like of my job. So it was quite an exciting and like self-doubting and nervous wracking first week for me. Like I made my introduction to the team like virtually, and to be frank, I've no idea what to expect. Like I was like in Hong Kong, like having a 12-hour time difference, never worked with Canadian before and never worked with VC before. So, I mean, the investment memo was like fabulous. Like, honestly, like this was for my first week. I joined a weekly investment meeting. Like the team was there to talk about the portfolio and talk about like the company updates and talk a lot of jargons of the VC industry, and I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about, but I couldn't show it on my face on Zoom, so I was like, sounds great, like I know what they're talking about, like keeping my straight face on. And like there's so much jargons in this industry, like for example the platform, like this work gave me so much confusion on the first week, I have to admit. during the briefing, they told me like my role is to manage platform for Elate. And I was thinking, okay, platform, like it should be some software platform they are using to manage the fund. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like so many VC platform, like VC are using platform to manage their fund and finance and portfolio updates. But right now, you know, right now, I know. So for those who don't know, like I know platform means, like platform has different meaning for different firm. But for us, it is like anything that relates, like anything that outside of direct investment that can help our investment activities and performances. So getting there.
Yeah, no, Rachel, I totally relate to what you were saying about the jargon. That's something where I definitely remember having to keep a straight face. And I kind of saw that continue when I had my first intern this past summer. We were in that big investment meeting doing the onboarding. And as our partners were kind of throwing out all the jargon, I was just like privately messaging my intern, like, here's what this means. Here's what this means. It's definitely a huge learning curve, especially if you don't have a background in business or finance. So it's a lot to just understand the world that we're in. And then it's another thing entirely to actually do the job effectively, having all of that background knowledge.
I love how candid you guys are and how open and vulnerable you guys are. It's personally for me, so I come from a very different background, not venture, not startups. I get started, my career is very different. But even today, what I do is whenever I see students graduating from my university, they're in their third or fourth year, you know, they always have a lot of confusion around what the corporate world looks like, what the actual business world looks like, because schools teach you very differently from what reality is. And so I always have this session with them and I tell them exactly, Emily and Rachel, that in the first week, first month, you will be confused. It's literally part of the job. It's okay. But what matters is how quickly you adapt, because that's what people measure your performance by. If you come in confused, that's okay. But how fast can you learn and how committed are you to actually nailing down the basics, right? And as you two mentioned, right, you two don't come from a corporate finance or a private equity or a, you know, background like that. So I'm kind of curious what your entry into the venture capital world was like, and how did you end up at your funds? Because I'm like ultra impressed.
Yeah, I mean, my path into the VC is nothing but untraditional. I was back in Hong Kong, and so like before Elate, I was deeply involved in the property scene already. So even though not particularly in the venture capital side, so I was working with Asia PropTech, which is an organization focused on creating business opportunities for Hong Kong PropTech startups. So one of my role is to network globally every day to find partners to introduce to the startups. And that's why I crossed paths with Elate partners 2 years back. Like it was 2 years back. Like they were investing in PropTech in Canada and US. I found it interesting. I reached out. And like I have a brief chat with Stephanie Wood, which is now one of my team members. We were just trying to fill out like the market and exploring potential collaborations. Like looking back, I've no idea that chat was so important that like got me there. Like I wasn't doing anything related to venture capital at all. And then just moving like a little bit forward to 1 year ago, like I was applying for my work visa in Canada. And then I was looking at LinkedIn. Staff was like, hey, we're hiring, like join us. I look at the job description and it was like, oh my God, like this is for me, like it writes Rachel all over it. I know it's a long stretch. Like I was still in Hong Kong but I was like, wouldn't hurt to try. Well, now you know, they took a gamble. They hired me all across the Pacific Ocean. And this March, I moved here, like moved to Toronto from Hong Kong to join this incredible team. Like I said earlier, like I wasn't confident or like wasn't sure like I was fitting that role. But right now I'm loving it. Like I'm honestly loving my job and the team and what I'm about to do next. Courtney Cooper and Stephanie Wood, my team members, they have been incredibly supportive. Like they have been telling me almost every single day that like how grateful they have me on board. So I guess like their gamble pay off.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to how important it is to have a network of support around you when you're getting into this kind of role. And I feel very lucky that the team at Roble has been so supportive and so warm. And I think the unique blend of our personalities has made it, you know, greater than the sum of its parts for sure. And similar to Rachel, I also have a very unusual entrance into the VC world. So I came in from the marketing side entirely. I had done digital marketing and social media website building for nonprofit organizations since I graduated from college in 2020. And then I kind of randomly decided to throw my life away and go teach abroad, doing a Fulbright scholarship for 9 months. So when I came back, I'm like, I should probably work on having a career. So I applied to be part of a career launch program through UPenn called Experience Lab. I think they're doing other types of programming now, but I was part of a digital marketing and storytelling cohort that kind of gave me a crash course in everything I needed to know on product marketing. And then as part of the program, they would have a field work aspect to it where we would be paired with a startup company for a couple of weeks just to kind of really apply what we've learned during the program. And I was actually matched with Roble Ventures, which at the time was just that one team member, our founding partner. And we just talked a little bit about my experiences. He gave me some readings and we talked about what I could do for Roble's social media accounts. And that was pretty much it. So I worked really hard to wrap my head around, like Rachel said, all the acronyms, all the aspects of moving businesses and applying that to the social media, which I very quickly found out is definitely not product marketing. I think that's been such a huge thing to get over is that you can't make cutesy posts for VC firms. Like you really have a unique way to communicate like the gravitas and like the importance of like what we do. And you just can't really do a social media challenge quite the same way. So a lot of the rules don't apply. I figured that out pretty quickly. So luckily by the end of my program at the end of 2022, I was offered a full-time position with Roble. We've since expanded to 3 team members. So it's been really great to navigate that dynamic. So this past year has been so humbling in so many ways. Like while this is by far and away the most intellectually stimulating job I've ever had, I still struggle with imposter syndrome and how to make myself the most useful to our team because I'm the only non-investment team member. A lot of the operations, marketing, PR responsibilities fall to me. And a lot of this stuff I'm doing for the first time. So I really want to be able to live up to the great things that our GP and our principal are doing. So it's a lot to navigate, like understanding the business world, understanding the VC ecosystem, and then also doing the various aspects of what could be considered that big umbrella of platform, which, you know, I think we'll probably get into that later. But the blessings and the curses of platform is that it could mean literally anything you want. So it'll look different at each firm you go to, at each person you talk to. So it gives you the chance to really make it what you want it to be, but it also means you might have to experiment a little bit with what works for you and for your firm.
I just want to take a minute to appreciate the fact that the two of you, how do I put this? From your stories, it's very obvious that I don't want to use the word networking because everybody uses the word networking, but I think the two of you always made efforts to talk to people outside of your bubble. Mm. And Emily, that applies to you. Rachel, that applies to you as well. And you were always looking for ways to collaborate or even just to get to know interesting people who, not for always a specific reason, but, you know, just in case something might happen down the road, I think. I met a managing partner the other day at a VC fund, and he said they have something called just-in-case networking. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm sensing from the two of you is making informed bets, taking calculated risks and getting to know folks who may be outside your initial circle of connections just to see how you can grow as a person, but also, you know, what's the next step for your career? What's the next step for your team? What's the next thing you can do, the iteration that you can make to improve as a human being or as a company, right? And I think I really, really admire that. Just wanted to take a minute to appreciate that piece. It's pretty rare in my opinion.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely want to add on to that. I think there is that just-in-case networking, which is always super helpful. But I think I've learned over the past year the value of networking for the job that you're currently in. I think Rachel and I, we've seen each other in the VC platform community, and that community has been so essential to me, just being able to be in a community of people who are doing the same thing, actually not doing the same thing, but are in that same bucket of things that we might be responsible for. It's just been so helpful to learn like best practices, like past struggles, to realize that like, I'm not just drowning in like a sea of things I don't know how to do. It's really, we're all kind of in the same boat of trying to figure out the right way to do things for our firm. So I'd say I've some of the best insights I've gotten have been from people in platform positions, even just like a year or two ahead of me. And it's kind of like being in that community has given me permission to explore things that I'm not good at. And that has just been really invaluable to me. So I think that part of networking has been relatively new to me, just like strengthening connections, not just for the benefit of our firm, which is great, but also just for my own professional development, because there's only so much. My GP is fantastic. He also has experience in marketing, but he is so busy running the fund that there's only so much time he can dedicate to helping me get up to speed on things. So it really helps to be able to lean on the community, and everyone has just been so friendly and so giving of their time. So I'm very grateful for that.
I know, I second that. Like, I absolutely love the platform community. Like, I'm the first hired of like the platform in LA, and I'm also new to the role. So like, I think for the first few months, I have been just eagerly chatting to everyone on the VC platform, and like, I'm trying to join every like Zoom meeting they're organizing. And I was like, oh my God, so this is how I should be doing my job. And they have been so selflessly sharing all of their stuff. Like, I never seen something like that. Like, not back in my old company. I guess it wasn't just as a collaborate. I guess like this VC platform industry and the role itself is pretty new. So everyone is still learning. There's no industry playbook for us to go around. So yeah, I'm just really, really grateful. Like, I got this community to rely on.
I really admire that, Emily, what you just mentioned, and Rachel, you as well. Kind of curious. So talk to us about your fund now, because I want to dig into the VC platform side of things and what your day-to-day looks like. But I think just to give the audience some context, would love to know more about the fund that you guys are a part of, the kinds of founders that you back, you know, what stage, et cetera. So happy to learn.
Yeah. So Roble Ventures invests exclusively in human enablement technology. So it's a more comprehensive approach to the future of work and lifelong learning, which involves like marketplaces and workforce efficiency, like SaaS solutions. And I'd say that we really love backing unconventional founders and underdogs, especially in a time where you have emerging technology like AI, which is just completely like codifying and systematizing conventional thinking. So we really value the perspectives, diverse perspectives of founders from underrepresented backgrounds or who just completely do not fit the Silicon Valley mold at all. So that's been really, especially from a platform perspective, being able to talk to these founders and feel like their excitement for what they're doing, that's been really rewarding. So we invest in pre-seed to Series A, and we love to lead due to our investment team's extensive experience as investors and operators and board members. And a lot of this comes through with the post-investment support that we provide. And Roble was founded in 2021 by Sergio Monsalve, who currently leads Stanford's Entrepreneur in Residence program and also teaches a class on innovation in edtech. So I cannot say enough good things about him. He has been such a fantastic mentor for both the founders that we meet and end up investing in, and also just for our team as well. I feel like I've learned so much, and he has just been so willing to like give that time and that patience. I really feel like he's invested in me in a lot of different ways, so hoping that I can pay out that investment sooner rather than later. So we're a small team of three, and I'm the only one in a platform role, but we're a very fast team. I think part of what people say about us, and something that we hold really close to our values, is being able to respect the founder's time and just be very responsive, get back to them super quickly. So It's a very fast moving team, and I'm sure Rachel can attest to that at her own firm, where you know she's only one in the platform role, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm also the only one in the platform role. We are also a team of three. Mm-hmm. So let me get started on a little bit about Elate. So we were founded in 2018 through a partnership between Dream, which is one of Canada's largest developers, and also Relay Ventures, so a renowned Canadian venture fund. So since then, we raised a fund primarily from strategic investors and are investing out of 60 million fund. Like, it's our first fund. So we have 12 active investments right now, and we are expecting to do around 10 more in the next couple of years. So as I mentioned, like, we are a three people team. So Courtney and Stephanie are leading the investment, and I'm the only one on the platform side.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, like, you may have noticed, we are all female. So we are an all-female team. I think it is pretty rare in this property industry. Pretty proud of it. Mm-hmm. And like, we're focusing on property and contact. Construction technology. So we don't have any specific vertical inside it, like, we are focusing on.
So Rachel, talk to us about, like, what kind of founders or what kind of startups do you have in your portfolio? Because I don't personally come across a lot of prop tech funds out there. So, you know, what kind of startups are you backing? Maybe one or two examples would be great.
Yeah, I mean, our portfolio is pretty diverse. We have Promise Robotics, which is using robotics and automation to build homes. Mm-hmm. And we also have PlatSplit, which is the largest co-living platform in US. And like, moving on, we have Altrio. Like, they are helping real estate investors with deal management. So I'll say we invest pretty much anything in property and contact. I mean, we typically invest in seed stage and are looking for founders that have some specific challenge or unique perspective that can make them the right person to start business at this time. I mean, it's a difficult time, right? Mm-hmm. And as a value-added investor, we are focusing on providing value more than just giving them a check. So we often introduce founders to like early stage advisory or maybe clients. There's one time we introduced like a client to our portfolio's company, and it turns out to be one of the biggest clients. So pretty great.
I just want to point something out. It's only been a year. And I imagine when you joined, Emily, you mentioned there was the imposter syndrome piece, which I would love to dig into. But I mean, there's also the defining what platform means for the fund. And this is not a joke. This is a lot of work. Based on my conversations, you don't just come in and say, you know what, this is what platform is. There is feedback you have to take from your portfolio companies. There's, yeah, your portfolio companies might want six things, but really you're able to provide two. Then you have to prioritize and figure out, well, who do we partner with, et cetera. How did the two of you manage that? Like, coming into a team, defining the platform role, and then retaining the same level of service over a year now, and then looking to improve. What does that journey look like? Because this is not a one-dimensional job. It's a multifaceted role. So I'm kind of curious, Rachel, how do you keep up with what's happening in platform, and what do you do to make sure you're consistently improving the platform function? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we are a small team, and mm-hmm. it is the first time we are having this platform role. So as you mentioned, like, there's a lot of exploring. At this moment, like, I don't have a defined role. Like, I know for a lot of companies, like venture capital firm, they prefer platform as portfolio support only, or maybe mm-hmm. like mostly for talent support. But for us, it's anything that outside of direct investment, so like operations. But for our portfolio support, like, we are doing a little bit more on the personal touch as we are a relatively small firm. So mm-hmm. we can get in some feedback from our founders, and I believe we have built solid relationship with them. Like, they can reach us out whenever and whatever they want. Like, for introductions, for like clients, partnership, talents, referrals, like maybe even like advice on growth. So at this moment, this is working for us right now. And like, we want to be the companion, the partners of the startups.
So I'd say for us, I actually take some of my digital marketing learnings to figuring out what kind of programming or support we want to provide. It's really going back to the first principles of what do our customers want from us? What do they value from us? So really starting with the founders and asking them what they need based on their stage, their own expertise, whether they just need like a few discounts on some services, or if they need something a lot more substantial, like customer introductions or talking to a go-to-market, professional. So I think we definitely start from what our founders in particular need. I think it's helpful to go and see what a lot of founders find helpful. But at the end of the day, part of our value is the creative limitations that are imposed by having a small team and having a relatively small and high conviction portfolio. It allows us to have a really narrow focus as to like what our founders in particular need. And then that helps us figure out what we as a three-person team have the bandwidth to provide. So I know we're currently, and hopefully this launches within the next year or so, we're putting together an advisory network of experts, domain experts who really can get into the nitty-gritty of helping our founders figure out like go-to-market or the KPIs that they need for the next raise, and really being able to take that one-on-one time with them that we can't always provide. But sometimes the most valuable thing we can do is just make the introduction or put things in front of them that, because we know founders are so busy and so overloaded, just having that really targeted support without prompting usually. And a part of that struggle is being able to correctly diagnose what they need, even if they don't know how to ask for it yet. So putting that in front of them has been extremely valuable. And again, I'll boost the platform community. I think we can come up with what we think we need to do, but then I can compare my notes with what I know at least 5 to 6 other people have already done like that exact thing. So it's been really helpful to be able to have a community to bounce that off on.
Yeah, I think we totally need to give a shout out to Joshua for putting the VC platform community together, literally vcplatform.com. Before I started the podcast, I actually got in touch with them and I found the two of you on that platform as well, you know, a little deep secret here. Mm-hmm. And when I met Joshua, I explained to him what I'm building, what I'm working on, what I want to accomplish. Such a nice guy, such a heartwarmingly nice person. And it was the first time I met him. He was like, you know what, Mash, it makes a lot of sense what you're building and let me know if I can be helpful on the podcast. I'm like, damn, like. And, you know, I want to point something out. I was telling this to another guest on the show the other day. Everyone's really helpful and wants to collaborate. I'm noticing in the VC platform space. It's predominantly women, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of natural tendency to share, to discuss, and to try and help. And I know this is episode number 5 or 6, but in the past, I've spoken to multiple folks from the platform space, right? And everyone's willing to have a conversation. It takes time to get it on their calendars, but when we're on the call, it just feels like we're so aligned and we're so open to be creating the episode together. It's very, very refreshing. And I'll tell you, it's refreshing for me because the domains that I'm used to are not as, you know, helpful, let's say, right? So I think we're all noticing that pattern. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to dig into very quickly before I move into my next question is the imposter syndrome piece, Emily. Mm-hmm. So I was speaking to Darcy from Outward VC on the last episode, and what she mentioned was that when you're faced with imposter syndrome, ultimately the way you can get to a state where it's reduced is by really matching the reality with what's in your mind, right? So if your mind's telling you you're not the right person for X or Y, what are people around you telling you? What's the feedback that your manager is giving you? What are people around you actually saying? Are they happy with your feedback? Are they satisfied? And then using reality, which is usually much brighter than what's in our minds, to calm us down and, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but calm us down and make sure we're more confident in ourselves and our day-to-day activities, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's super interesting seeing you two be single person platform professionals in your team, small, lean team, having those one-on-ones and keeping that personal touch, as you mentioned, Emily, mm-hmm. to really add value as much as you can to those individual startups, right? Mm-hmm. I was talking to Heartland VC as well as Foundation Capital a couple of months ago. And what they mentioned is one way they bring value to their portfolio companies is by introducing them to go-to-market executives and C-suite and VPs of other companies, either for just introductions, just getting to know each other, or ultimately, as one of you mentioned, those intros might someday become customers of those startups as well. And I think what I'm seeing is larger funds typically have those kinds of relationships being built out on a weekly or a monthly basis because they take a lot of time to get down. And the portfolio startup probably has one chance at a very good intro, right? So it's, again, very impressive to see how the VC platform function overall is maturing. One question I have for the two of you before I move into my last question of the day. You know, if there's a listener listening to this podcast and they want to get into the VC platform space, they know people are friendly, but they just don't know where to start. Rachel, kind of curious, what advice would you have for them? You know, if there was one or two pieces of advice, what would you give them so that they're able to come into the VC platform space and get started in a role with confidence?
Yeah, I mean, before I found my place at Elate, like you said, Mash, like people have like different perspective like of this VC, like imagination of the VC. Like for us, like for me, I was thinking about, hey, it should be somewhat like a Wall Street style, maybe like focusing on like financial crunching numbers, all about the cap tables. Well, it was wrong. It was all about human. Like it was incredibly human. Like I kind of stumbled into this space. Like I sometimes feel a little bit guilty about this because I know there's so many dedicated folks like working tirelessly to break into VC, and I just kind of wander in, and it's just all because of connections. Like if I didn't reach out to Stephanie like 2 years ago, I wouldn't be here. So like VC platform is the same. Like we mentioned earlier on, like how collaborative and how helpful people can be. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get into space, just connect. Like go search LinkedIn, like find Joshua, find us. Like there's so many people working on the platform. They're willing to chat. Don't hesitate. Like I know, like you mentioned something like backup connections. I don't think that's a backup, but just in case, like connection, but just reach out. Like it's a people business. It's not a money business. And don't collect the idea of what VC like should be, get into your head. And your journey into VC might not be like as planted. Like it may not be following a business degree or like an MBA or any sort. Like for us it's marketing, and for me it's geography. Like that's perfectly all right. Just you need to find the right person and then you can get into that.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like Rachel really put it in a beautiful package. It's really about when people say it's not what you know, it's who you know. Usually that's used in a negative connotation, as it should be in some instances. But I think for VC, it being about who you know isn't necessarily a bad thing, because networking is just everything in this industry. And it's not just about getting opportunities. It's also about building up a base of knowledge about what VC could look like for you. I think part of what is fantastic about VC platform or VC platform roles is that it looks different at literally every firm. This might be due to fund size, team size, like your own management expertise, the portfolio size. Like there's just so many different variables that influence what your role could be. And this is great because it means you have so many entry points into the VC world. And, you know, again, I don't have a business degree. I did not study any of this. I went to a small liberal arts college and I did a lot of anthropology in Iceland kind of thing. So I really had no idea what I was doing, but I came in more from like the side that I already connected to and was able to grow the role from there and just tack on so many new skills. So this does make it a little challenging because it means you might have to talk to a good number of people in order to really build up an idea in your head of what would be possible for you. But, you know, like Rachel said, like that's the name of the game. And we are already a very welcoming community. We are happy to talk about our experiences because we know what it's like to be alone or mostly alone, trying to figure out the best way to add value to our firms. And we have all found solace in being able to reach out to that community and just throw ideas at the wall and have them come back and be validated and affirmed over and over again. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out. I think we all have very complex experiences with the VC. So very happy to share. Please definitely feel free to connect with us.
I'll definitely put your contact details in the show notes. I think the word motivational is considered very, it's like a general word, generic word, but Rachel and Emily individually and together, that what the two of you just mentioned is so, so motivational. And again, it just goes to show that how collaborative the space actually is. And I come from a consulting background. Yes, it can be collaborative, but a lot of times there's a lot of gatekeeping. And I get it. Some things could be gate kept, I understand. But because of that gatekeeping, what happens is it creates a very, I think, kind of like the corporate finance space, consulting is seen as a very posh, difficult to get in space. And I get it. I had to work really hard to get my entry. But, you know, because of that, what happens is students in university, they don't get the guidance they need up until the day before the interview. And I'm thinking, dude, you should have, this is not how it should be. You should have been mentored for the last three quarters, not for the last 3 hours, because that sets you up for failure. So yeah. I'm on a personal mission to kind of change that. So whenever I come across students from my university or whatever, I always make that extra 20, 30 minute break in my day to talk to that guy or girl and say, hey man, it's not that difficult. Here's what you should be doing. Or, hey, it will be difficult, but here's how you can reduce the risk and reduce your friction, right? So I very much appreciate what you guys are saying. And obviously I'll put your contact details below. It's just so, so nice. And words can't express how warm my heart feels on a cold Thursday morning. But as we wrap up the episodes, I do want to ask you guys some questions, which we did not anticipate, but I'll ask you anyway. It's rapid fire questions, super small questions. It's kind of curious what the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay, let's do it. Let's see. So favorite pizza topping, what is it?
Italian sausage.
I think you love, like, I like chicken on it, like with pesto sauce.
That's really good. We do that all the time. We get chicken pesto pizza.
Chicken pesto pizza. That is interesting.
You know, you need to get pesto with the barbecue sauce. So you need like a combination pesto barbecue sauce on chicken on pizza. No, don't give me that face. You need to try it first.
people are so like, what's the word? Like
defensive
about pizza toppings. The last person I asked, she said, Darcy from Outward VC. So she's Irish, South African born. She said avocado. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, it's a South African thing.
But I've never heard of that. But I cannot judge.
Me too. I know pineapple is not the answer, so I'm not going to do that.
I was afraid one of you guys would say pineapple, and I was a little. But I do use pineapple sometimes, and you can say that, Emily. Don't. No, you cannot say that. It adds this sweetness to the pizza.
I don't know. Sweetness on the pizza. I really don't. It's a savory.
Wow, you guys are so defensive. The most defensive part of this whole podcast was pizza.
You started this. Insane.
Favorite way to spend a Sunday relaxing evening? What would that be? Or afternoon, rather. Sunday relaxing afternoon. What's your ideal way to spend it?
Taking a nap with my dog. Like, I mean, I'm in Hong Kong, so I have my dogs with me right now. But back in Toronto, I was like, I used to dog sit. Like, I love to dog sit. And whenever I have a dog during the weekend, like, I just nap with them on the couch during the Sunday morning. Evening, afternoon, any day.
Adorable. Love it.
Yeah. This sounds kind of lame, but I really like food prepping. I think I like to hard boil about 10 eggs at once and then peel them and then make food because I am so busy during the week that I just don't want to think about making food and just grab it. But I think I also like to go rock climbing. That's something I've been doing for about a year now. So definitely like to, it's my way of being social is going and driving out rock climbing with people. So that's been pretty fun.
Yeah. I'm going to say mine's just playing video games. So different from the two of you.
What kind of games do you play?
Don't even get me started. That's another podcast episode, Emily. You don't know what you're asking, but,
we should get into it.
Witcher, Far Cry. Funny enough, never tried GTA. Didn't really, it's too much. And then now I'm playing Need for Speed. Oh, I've been playing this ever since I was a child. My dad would love the McLaren. He would always drive the McLaren. He would always crash the car in the game. I don't know why he did. Always. Like, literally, he would never come first. And I remember, I'm like, Dad, what are you doing?
He's getting something out of the system, probably.
Love it. And the last question is, favorite book?
I'll plug Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell for fiction. It's just it's a wide spanning tale. They made it into a movie, bit of a problematic movie, but the book was really, really good. It's a lot of that magical realism space that I love. And then For nonfiction, I recently read the Oppenheimer biography, American Prometheus. I had like no interest in biographies before that, but after watching the Nolan movie a few months ago, I really felt like there was a lot I was missing out on, even from like a 3-hour film. So I bought the book and it was just like, just so complex. Like they have so much on this guy's life, in part because he spent so much of his life under illegal surveillance from a corrupt FBI. So I just really, really enjoyed it. It's like when you think of real life people who have had lives that just make really good stories, you don't think that happens a lot. But I think Oppenheimer definitely had a life that makes for a very interesting and poignant story. So I highly recommend that book.
Interesting.
I mean, for me, I mainly read Chinese book, so I don't feel like it's the right audience to share. But for like English, I know it's a huge cliche, but Harry Potter. Like a lot. I know it's a cliche.
That's valid.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading it at dark during midnight. Like I was like literally inside of my bed sheets, because like my dad won't allow me to like stay after 10 p.m. But like I have to finish your book. So I was like I was like reusing my phone for the light and then like trying to read it. I think that's why like I got like huge, like I have to wear like huge glasses during my teenage time. I think that's Harry Potter. And I still got a book. Like, I love it. I read it from time to time. Like, when I have the time to read the whole 7 chapters, like, a whole 7 books, like, throughout the period. So, yeah.
You got large glasses like Harry Potter himself, right? That's the funny part.
One movie where he was under the covers at the beginning and he was reading a book by wandlight. It sounds like you have a lot in common with him.
Yeah.
My favorite, well, I just read, obviously VC books right now. I'm reading Secrets of Sand Hill Road by a partner from A16Z. Mm-hmm. Halfway through the book, the terminology, right? Like what you guys mentioned towards the beginning, it takes a while to get used to. So I keep going back to the chapters and rereading, because every time you reread, I get like 0.1% more smarter. So I keep doing that. But Rachel, you're reminding me of the time I used to read the Goosebumps series when I was super young. Mm-hmm. My mom got a bit worried because I would just breeze through the whole book in like an hour. I would never do that with a school book. So my mom was like, what's in that book? I'm like, Mom, just let me have something for myself. But cool. This was super interesting. I felt like we should have started with these because we all got defensive and our characters came out, the Harry Potter, the pizza topping, and my video games, I guess. But Rachel, Emily, this was super, super nice. Got a lot of gems. Would love to share with the audience later on after I edit the episodes. Super, super delighted to have you guys on. Thank you so much for coming, really.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. This was fantastic.
What did I tell you guys? I got canceled for a pizza topping. Can you believe it? I'm never asking anybody that question ever again. But jokes aside, guys, what a touching episode. You know, the more I learn about the venture capital world, the less intimidated I personally get, because I realize it's really just people helping each other be more successful. Obviously, that doesn't apply to the entire industry, but there's certainly pockets of people and places and things where you can create your own niche and carve out your own space and actually be useful to people in the venture capital world. Personally, I really liked how Rachel and Emily were both very vulnerable and honest about who they are and who they're not, and how they felt when they first joined the team. You don't hear that these things that often. I feel like one of the things about the venture capital world is that people love looking really good and acting like they know everything. And that's exactly what intimidates people like myself sometimes, because we're too afraid to look stupid or we're too afraid to ask the wrong questions. But the way Rachel and Emily presented their journey and, you know, all of that, it personally gives me hope. And it gives hope to folks like us who want to get into the venture capital space, and to those people who are just oftentimes too scared to even try to attempt getting into the venture capital world, right? So I personally really love the practical advice they dropped towards the end, especially about, you know, making yourself useful and really just trying things out, trying to get as much coffee chats as you can. And I think that really hits the mark for me. And, you know, like I'll tell you guys a story before I sign off today. I think I sent 50 or 60 emails to emerging managers and angels on Twitter a long time ago, DMs, emails, etc. And I figured that if I make introductions, cross introductions to different VCs, maybe I can find a little space for me there in the industry. And after sending so many DMs, I met an individual who was actually a super cool person. He was an ex-CMO. Right now, he's an emerging manager raising a vertical SaaS fund. But that's the thing. I met him in Austin physically last month, but only after I had sent 50 emails trying to add value to the venture capital world. And that took literally over a year. So the point I'm trying to make is be persistent, have confidence in yourself, and listen to people like Rachel and Emily. I'll put their details in the show notes below so you guys can contact her and ask them all the questions you want. Thanks again for tuning in. Bye now.